Check this out. An international team of scientists announced this week that they finally got out the secrets of the Antikythera mechanism. Yeah, finally. Scientists have been able to decode about 3,500 characters of text, and it was a kind of user's manual, and it was previously just completely unreadable. It's an incredible story. Check it out right now in the news section at coasttocoastam.com. My guest tonight, David Cereda. We're talking about pyramids and prophecy and his new book, God's Great Pyramid. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. This is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. David, right before the break, we were talking, or you were starting to disclose this last set of formulas that you were using at the base of the pyramid. And I want to finish that thought off, but then I need to get to the 2025 number. And there's a connection between...
The last prophecy.
Right, right. There's a all of this connects together. I want the audience to know. So let's go ahead and finish that last formula.
The first thing is I created what's called God's ruler for every single thing God told the prophets to build. And this number, 5.15125, with the decimal sliding over to the left and the right, fits in perfectly everywhere. Four of those make a 20.605 true inch royal cubit. And basically what happens is when you take the speed of light divided by a wavelength, that's how you get a frequency. But according to history, we didn't know the speed of light accurately until 1972 or 73. And therefore, what I'm about to tell you is utterly impossible for Kefren or Cheops to have finished the base of the capstone base of the Great Pyramid with the missing, I believe it's a Holy of Holies now, a cube and not a pyramidion. But basically, those dimensions, 572.2 Egyptian inches converted to our inches times 4 is the distance around that circuit. You take the speed of light in inches, so you're at the same resolution divided by that circuit, and you get 5151. You get 5.151 megahertz square, the same number as God's building block. So how the heck can that happen? How the heck did Cheops know that? Impossible. Utterly impossible. There's only one being who could build everything with this same formula that every prophet was told to build with absolute consistency. And to know the speed of light divided by where you cut the top of the pyramid off would produce the same number. Oh, my God, forget about Cheops and Kefren, you know, that it's his pyramid. It's absolutely not. And once you prove it's God's pyramid, then it needs to be preserved because you have these fanatical Muslim clerics who want to blow it up. In fact, that's one of the reasons it's missing all the limestone casings and possibly even some other finer details, because they were starting to dismantle it because they believed it was an object that was not God's temple, that it was some other religion. And what they don't understand is when you read Robert Temple's book, Egyptian Dawn, you find out that there was never a single hieroglyph, there was never a single papyrus, there was no markings. The Great Pyramid was completely void of all markings and all hieroglyphs. There were some forged documents that were put in the rafters in the king's chamber by some early archaeologists because they were trying to get money proving that it was Egyptian. But it wasn't Egyptian. The Egyptian people themselves, the tallest average people of Egypt during the era of the time that they believe it was built, were too small. Like their elbow to their fingertip as a common cubit was way too short to represent a royal cubit. And the only really tall historical people are, for example, when you go way back, and this is Robert Temple's work, thanks to him, King Kazekemui, they believe, was 8 feet tall. Now, there's a ratio for the formula from the elbow to the fingertip, which I did on myself because I'm 6 feet, and which is just a moderate height, you know, good height for a man today. There's
right.
Actually, a lot of these kids today are so tall. I'm looking around and I feel short now. I don't know what.
Yeah, six foot isn't what it used to be, is it?
It isn't, but in Egypt, it is tall because they're all like the studies I read were like 5 foot 6 men, 5 foot 7 would be a pretty tall, Middle Eastern Egyptian person. But actually, in Robert Temple's research, when they were digging in the strata and the layer of the soil, they found an earlier race of people that were all African. And for a while, they thought they were the earliest Egyptians. But then when they went deeper in the soil, they found the red, blonde-haired, blue-eyed mummies, which were more Nordic. And they were probably the oldest. But King Kazakhmili was tall enough, taller than Shaquille O'Neal, to have a royal cubit measured from his elbow to finger plus a hand breadth to equal the 20.605
So what year would
inch.
we be talking here? Because if we're
Oh no,
taking
it goes way
way back,
before
right?
Khafre. I mean, Khafre is old. Cheops is Khafre, the same person. But you see, you can't think for here's another amazing fact, and this is Robert Temple's work. The shadow cast at the lowest angle of the sun from the top of the Great Pyramid, which is unfinished, produces a shadow square, and he did it in feet. I don't have the number right in front of me. I converted it to metric, and it's just a tad shy of a perfect kilometer. With the finished cube on the top, the shadow would be a perfect kilometer. Well, nobody, Khafre couldn't have known what a kilometer was because they didn't even know what a meter was. They knew what an inch was, and he knew what a cubit and a royal cubit was, but they didn't know, even though they had both 60 or 6 base math counting systems, which were Babylonian, and they also had 10 base, they did not have a meter or a kilometer. So why would the shadow? I don't know why Robert Temple didn't see this. He just did it in feet. I just converted it to metric, to meters, and you're just shy of 1,000 meters, which is a kilometer on the shadow square. That would there's so much mathematical proof in my book that he did not build or design this pyramid. This
Well,
is
if we
clearly.
take, and this is key here. So if we take Cheops out, which is 2500 BC approximately, and we take him out of the play, and we bring in Enoch in, or God in, now what is the dating on the pyramid?
So this is where it gets really interesting because there's one passage in the canonized four Christian gospels where Jesus is telling a certain group of Jews that you're actually worshiping a warfaring God who is a murderer and a liar since the beginning, and that's what he says to him. But there is the true God of Enoch never mentions his name to Enoch. He doesn't give him a name. And this God never instigates any reason to go to war or battle. And so there are, in the Gnostic Christian Gospels, this particular warfaring God who tries to tell people he's God. His name is Yaltabaoth in the Gnostic Christian Gospels. And it's very prevalent, evidence that what Jesus was talking about to that certain group of Jews is that you wouldn't be persecuting me if you were really of the true lineage of the true God. So we know that Enoch is the first prophet, and then you come to the prophets that are famous in the Bible. It doesn't mean that there was nobody else that was in direct communion with the original great God who, in the book of Enoch, when Enoch sees him in the dream, Archangel Michael and Gabriel are at his side. He lands in this crystal spaceship. He's so bright and powerful, Enoch falls upon his face and can't look at him. And then you see in Ezekiel the same thing. Ezekiel falls on his face. God is flying in this, what appears to be a flying saucer, actually, the wheels, and lands. And then Enoch is given by an angel who shows him an elbow to fingertip plus a hand breadth, which is a royal cubit. And when you look at Ezekiel's temple, which never got built, it has these same codes in it. The 5.15125 and multiples of it are everywhere inside of that complex. And the Ezekiel complex was never built, but I believe one of the things that happened, like when Christ was crucified and the lightning bolt hit the top of the temple where the Holy of Holies and the Ark of the Covenant was and it split, is because it wasn't built with the exact right dimensions. And the exact right dimensions produce the exact right frequency. And therefore, it wasn't resonating perfectly. It was probably close, but not perfect. So God wants another temple built, and that's Ezekiel, and that never got built. And there were political battles over who and where the next Holy of Holies would be built, and the Ark of the Covenant disappears. And the Ark, the frequencies, when I take the dimensions of the Ark of the Covenant itself, the frequencies are the same as the Holy of Holies, except they're in gigahertz versus megahertz, but they're the same numbers. You take the speed of light divided by the space, the circular space and the square space. This is all detailed in my work. And you see these numbers, and these numbers eventually lead me to find the most perfect harmonic music scale. But so we're not going to go into that right now, because you want to go into the last prophecy.
And yes.
That is really amazing.
2025.
See, Peter Lemazurier, I mean, this is the first really interesting book I ever read as a kid. You know, I'm 55 years old, so in 1977, when this came out, Lemazurier was a French mathematician, considered one of the greatest mathematicians in the world. And it's his book where we find the 41.21 equals 2 royal cubits in 14 places in the Great Pyramid, the most common measurement in the pyramid. He believes the entire pyramid is a time clock, and it knows everything that's going to happen. In fact, after 1977, when he published this, there were things the book predicted that all came true. Like he had basically 1985, powerful spiritual influences start to irradiate the enlightened. He described Halley's Comet, the New Age movement being born. And then he says in this book that somewhere between 2004 to 2025, plus or minus 3 years, there'll be a total collapse of the material civilization. I'm looking at that right now in his book. And by 2025, there would be partial reestablishment of civilized societies. And 2034, October 31st, the appearance in the sky of the sign of the Messiah. And October 21st, 2039, the Christos reincarnates in a physical man, the long-awaited return of the second coming of Christ. Well, that's an interesting window of dates, which is coming up. You know, we all saw the year 2000 and 2012, which had some very interesting changes occurring, but we haven't seen the total collapse of the materialist civilization yet. Well, I was reading the work of Alice Bailey, and Alice Bailey died in 1940-something. She was one of the early Edgar Cayce-type seers. She was a seer and a trance medium, and she had trance channelings with Christ and with some ascended Tibetan masters known as the Tibetan, and she was given the same date. 2025, she talks about a color of light that will come, most likely, I predict, from our sun, that will change everything on the earth, and the Christ reincarnates. Again, she doesn't stick to a date in a year, but she gives you a plus or minus around it, just like Lemazurier does in his measurements in the Great Pyramid.
Right.
But what interests me is her date is the same. And then a third source, which is on Graham Hancock's website, there's an Indian, East Indian scholar who said the end of Kali Yuga, which are these great long cycles in the Indian Vedic system, and the Vedas are arguably even 10,000 years old, according to B.G. Siddharth, and basically they believe 2025 is the end of Kali Yuga. This particular Indian scholar believes that. And I found, now this is, I don't want to set up any fear, and I don't want to set up any ideas like 2012 was going to be the end of the world and we're going to do this again.
Right, right.
We're going to go through this again.
Right.
But it is interesting. All I can say is Lemazurier wrote this book published it in 77 and probably did the research a lot earlier. He takes every pyramid inch in every single passage of the Great Pyramid, and he measures it as a time clock to world events. So he has events going all the way to the year. The pyramid ends at 3989 AD, so it's way up there, right? And it starts from 2623 BC, which is actually before Cheops, right? Because he's 2500 BC. So that's where he has this clock in here of every event in history. And when you think of the pyramid knowing all these events, and even the what's known as the Bethlehem angle, the 26.3 degrees is the slope of the ascending-descending passage, but yet at summer solstice, at noon, the pyramid casts a shadow at that angle, 26.3 degrees, and it runs right through Bethlehem. So therefore, whoever built the pyramid, did they know everything that was going to happen in the history of the world, including the birth of Christ? I mean, that wouldn't be Khafre and Cheops, right?
Right.
That would have to be God, the true God of Enoch and the correct prophets.
And also with Alice Bailey, you know, that was 30 years before Peter wrote his book. And the Kali Yuga and their references on their calendar to 2025, these three sources are completely independent of each other.
And that, you're right. And that's why I wanted to bring it up tonight, because, you know, I'm a big fan of Lemaizre's work. I've only seen a few tiny math mistakes, and he's an absolute math genius. There are some discrepancies. Like, here's one. This one will blow you away. Lemaizre was trying to find the golden or phi ratio reference to the base of the Great Pyramid to its height. So he would take the base of the Great Pyramid, you know, the different sides are slightly different lengths, about 750 point something feet, and times the golden ratio, 1.618, and then to see if it matched the height of the pyramid. And it didn't quite match it right, but I took the height of the Great Pyramid in feet times the golden ratio to see what the base size it would produce was, and guess what the number is? 777.77. 777.77 feet.
Incredible.
Now, holy cow, that thing. Why it's incredible is because the Egyptians didn't use feet. They used an inch and a cubit and a royal cubit. So only God would know that we would eventually invent feet. Why such a perfect number? And why, when I take 5.15125, what I believe is God's building block, which is about as wide as a really wide hand, which would be like a god, and basically you take the 572.2, you know, Egyptian inches, convert it, and divide the 5.151 by that, and you get 1111. You get 111.1, 1111, and then times four sides, you get 444. And then you get phi, the height of the Great Pyramid times phi, 1.618033987, which is more resolved golden ratio than Leonardo of Pisa himself ever resolved.
That's right. The golden ratio, I'm going to jump in. We're going to hit a break right here. The golden ratio is in every aspect of any math that you can work into the Great Pyramid. They knew about that. It's pretty fascinating how 1.618 is in just about every calculation when it comes to the Great Pyramid. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Tonight, David Serrata. Your calls next. This is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast AM. And our guest tonight is David Serrata. David, I've got calls completely backed up. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Wild Card. Let's go to Blair in Sedona. Blair, welcome to Coast to Coast.
Well, thank you, Jimmy, and hello, David.
Blair, my God, it's you.
Well, listen, you're talking about pyramidal energy and angles brought up the keys of Enoch, specifically Professor Hertak's key 215, when he talks about contained within the Great Pyramids are numerous codes pertinent to the interrelationships of man with the planet, the solar system, and the entirety of the galaxy. And he also uses this word that I wonder if you're familiar with called cheliocosm. A cheliocosm represents the multiplicity of evolution and the greater connection between the many universes fused into the Father's plan, in contrast to the millennium, which is defined with a limited time-space conundrum. Now, as we're going through these changes here, there is a similarity in the keys of Enoch, and I wanted to know if that has influenced you. And also, the changing light of the sun, as the Mayans said, means we're going to change our interrelationships with this planet. Don't you agree?
Well, first of all, it's great to hear a voice, Blair, because I know Blair personally from our years living in Sedona. And I read the Keys of Enoch many years ago. But my new discovery about how the 5151 rules the Great Pyramid and all of God's designs. Also, remember, Stonehenge sits at 51 degrees, 1 minute north latitude. The United States has 50 states, and the 51st is hidden as the District of Columbia. Many of the crop circles in England appear between the 51 degrees and 51 minute line, which is just shy of 52 degrees, actually, when you do degrees, minutes, and seconds. So there, you can see all these manifestations around the 5151 harmonics. And, you know, the J.J. Hertog book was on the Keys of Enoch, was a channeled book, which is incredibly interesting. You know, I was reading the Book of Enoch, Richard Lawrence, Archbishop of Cashel, translation as one of my earliest studies. And I really believe there might be a clue in there. And I don't know if this is in the Keys of Enoch, that the capstone of the Great Pyramid was made of sapphire. It was actually a gem coating around the capstone, and the stones were pure white limestone blocks, which made it very, very shiny. And also, that 777, 777 feet, 0.77 feet, when you take the height of the Great Pyramid times the golden ratio at that resolution, nobody really knows at the bottom how thick the casings were. They don't know if they were the same thickness all the way down. So there are slight discrepancies that, and that would only add maybe 12 feet on each side if it was 7777. And so that's, you know, these are things that need to be studied further. But thanks for bringing that up, Claire. That's wonderful stuff.
Sure thing, David. Good luck and carry on your good work.
Thank you, Blair. That it's always good to hear a familiar voice, isn't it?
Well,
but
also,
well, let me ask
also,
you.
But Area 51. I want to point that out. Like, there's the number again. And are the builders behind the secret societies aware of what I'm talking about tonight?
Well, but if you, and that's interesting because what if you did increase that 12 feet per side on the Great Pyramid? What
it's
would
about
that?
It's not exactly that, but when you take the 750-something feet per side right now and you change it to 777.77, it's going to be just a little bit thicker. And so they look at the ground and they say, where did the original limestone casings end and how much wider was it? It's so close. It's so close to 7777. I would say that because I did the phi ratio in reverse and
right,
taking what we think is the base, divided by phi to see the top, I would say it's probably that perfect because the other numbers are that perfect.
Well, what happens with the golden ratio, which is the perfect number, and if it was 7777 and you brought in the golden ratio, does it still, everything still work?
Well, yeah, it still works because, you see, the way like transistors are made is you have these multiple layers of materials. You don't use the same material. Just like in a battery, you have a zinc and a copper probe. You need that to create electrical difference.
Right,
so
right.
Electrons move. And the pyramid has three, it actually has more than three or four layers of different types of material to cause the energy to start moving. So, but that 5151 actually is so deep, there are places that it exists that I'm keeping secret for now on the Earth. But basically, it is such a deep number, and it's everywhere and everything God designed, and it goes into my lost music scale, which the C note is 515.1, and this will interest you. I mean, I love the music you're putting on because I'm time traveling as you're putting on this music. It takes me back to my teens and my early years. I had a meeting with Prince's assistant, his personal assistant in Sedona, just before we left. And she was interested in telling him about my pyramid music scale because I found a whole perfect music scale. When you tone test that music scale versus the chromatic 12-tone scale, which distorts pretty badly when you do tone testing, and you test the solfeggio scale, which is better, but it's not a music scale. There's 9 tones in solfeggio. They're definitely better than our music scale, but the pyramid scale is even better. And so I wanted to tell Prince all about it, and she was telling me, you know, Prince is broke right now. He's battling, you know, for his rights to his songs. He's living in a friend's house. He has no money. He's dirt poor. And he doesn't have money to do anything. And I'm like, but I really think if he did music to this scale, it would really, really be astounding. And since I put this video out called The Lost Music Scale or The Scale of Life on YouTube, my channel is Spaceman99 David Sarita. You can watch this. You can listen to the tone testing of even the 444 scale. The 432 scale actually distorts really badly. The 432 is an interesting number by itself, but it doesn't work with any type of music scale. But the 5151 music scale, which is all in the book, and I give the numbers out in the book at the end, is so perfect melodically. You have to understand, like, the history of where our music scale came from is Pythagoras and Kepler. And you realize when the god Apollo and Hermes create the harp, the lyre, and then this guy comes along named Orpheus, and they give him a lyre. He goes to Egypt, comes back with a superior music scale, and the gods are outraged, and somebody beheads him. In some versions, Zeus is the one who beheads Orpheus because his music scale was so beautiful. I mean, it's so astounding, the Orphic tradition. Orphics were like, Jehovah's Witnesses. They would go door to door teaching and preaching these tones and this scale. I believe he found the same scale that I found, music scale, that's in the Great Pyramid. And I think all of this comes down to harmonics in the end. And it the shift that it causes in your consciousness to meditate to these tones and to actually, my wife, you know, as a singer, you know, you sing your voice at the pitches you hear as per the instrument so that you can master those pitches in your voice. When we sing and make vowel sounds to these tones, which the ancient Egyptians did, actually in the Gospel of the Egyptians, Jesus is basically teaching what the ancient Egyptians already taught, that is, if you mimic these tones with vowel sounds yourself, you turn on your light body. And I think that's what was happening. I think that's what these numbers are about. They're about finding the original. I really believe it is God's music scale now. I really believe that because they all come from the Great Pyramid. All these numbers come from it. And I believe it's a lost music scale, and I don't believe Pythagoras knew it. I believe Orpheus knew it, but Pythagoras actually, it's Galileo's father, was this classical musician, and he argued that the Pythagorean scale was slightly off. And it is. When you do a tone test, the numbers all wobble. They're not perfect.
Yeah, I've heard the same thing through my music career, too, as well. Let's go to right in the middle of the country. Let's go to Arkansas. Brandon, you're up next on Coast to Coast.
Hey there, David Sarita. Much love.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay. I wanted to start with a question. That will actually lead into some very interesting stuff, and I think it will answer a lot of the stuff that you're thinking about with this topic. Have you considered the idea that Noah was the builder of the pyramids?
Oh, that's interesting, David.
Well, see, I like your question a lot, because the more I've looked at the dimensions of Noah's Ark, 300 royal cubits by 50 by 30, times 20.605, all of them, the third one, 30 royal cubits times 20.605, equals 618.15, and that's God's phi ratio. That's God's golden ratio, the 618.15, because that appears everywhere in all of God's designs as well.
Right.
Which is just, you take 5.151.25 divided by that, and you'll see that it fits perfectly. It's just stacking that number together to get God's phi. But basically, the more you look at Noah's Ark, I really think it was a myth that it was a boat. And it's, remember, when you take the diameter of Noah's Ark, 6,181.5 inches divided by 12, you get 515.125 feet long, so 515.125 feet. You make two circles and you cross them at that diameter, you get a Vesica Pisces whose diameter is the height of the Great Pyramid plus a Holy of Holies cube, which is only another 34.34 feet. But it fits perfect. I mean, it's only a smidgen off, and that's just probably due to our current slight error in the height measurement on the Great Pyramid.
Right, right.
That tells me the question of the caller is Noah's Ark really the Great Pyramid? Because in Isaiah, it says, and this is really, really the clue. It says, Isaiah 19:19. And notice it's 19:19, which is the 9191 in verse. In that day there shall be an altar to the Lord in the midst of the land of Egypt, and a pillar at the border thereof to the Lord. A pillar at the border thereof to the Lord. Now, the Egyptians, as we know them as Egyptians, did not pray or worship the God of Israel. So this is a clue that it's possible that the Great Pyramid really is the Ark of Noah. There's a possibility there because the math is so perfect with this Vesica Pisces that it's very possible the Vesica Pisces was interpreted as the shape of a boat. And it led to a myth. There's no way one man built a boat 515 feet long and like 40 or, well, the height of it, you know, is three stories of about 17 feet. I mean, holy cow, that's like a massive building. How did one guy do this? It doesn't add up, right? And we also look at the tale of Gilgamesh, excuse me, which is older, and it's very possible that mythologies and based on your current understanding of science, you couldn't imagine that the speed of light divided by the capstone base would produce 5151. So you would say, well, that's impossible because the builder didn't know the speed of light and they didn't know anything like that. So most scholars just toss that out as a coincidence.
Right, right,
so
right.
That's
right.
Because that's your basic understanding. So if
that's
you
right.
use boats as a means of travel, you would create a myth because you couldn't understand a teleportation device and you'd say it must have been a boat. And then that story gets told for generations and generations, and maybe that's not what it was. And I thought of the exact same thing that the caller is asking. Is I can't prove that yet, but the math says there's a perfect marriage between the length of Noah's Ark and the Vesica Pisces, which is at the shape of a boat, is the height of the Great Pyramid plus the Holy of Holies cube. Now, if you finish the Great Pyramid to a pyramidian capstone, it wouldn't be much different in height in a Holy of Holies cube sitting on top. The difference is tiny. So they both work within the Vesica Pisces. There's just a slight margin of difference there, which I note in the book.
Well, out of all the stories in the Bible, when it comes down to Noah, it was always one of the funnest things to read about when you're a kid. It's fascinating, especially a boy. You know, it's, you know, a big boat and it's getting down in the storm but the 2x2 with the animals, you know, everything going on. I've always, since I was a kid, I've always had really, really strong issues about that part of the story. It just, that was the part that for me just didn't add up.
Yeah, and they got to go to the bathroom in there. You got to have enough food for them for 40 days and 40 nights. I mean, that's a lot of food, right? So how did they fit it all in the boat?
How did it float?
And how did it float? And how did one guy build a Titanic? It's huge.
I've just always had issues with it, but it was always the funnest story to read, too, mm-hmm. as well. Now, the teleportation idea. So, really quick before we hit this break, David, where were they teleported to?
Well, see, that's the question. You know, when you have two frequency oscillators at the same frequency, you have telecommunication between any two oscillators at the same frequency at the speed of light. But if you're physically quantum tunneling and opening a quantum tunnel between two oscillators, would they physically teleport, you know, an object between those two points? And that would mean God is off world and has, you know, we know from Ezekiel that God was flying this giant wheeled craft. And we know from Enoch it was the same thing. It was a giant crystal craft that had a window, and when Enoch goes inside, he sees the stars going by, so he's going really fast. So we know that's possible, and if you add ufology into all that, the Ark could have then also the Vesca Pisces between the two lengths of Noah's Ark, being the height of the Great Pyramid, the Vesica Pisces is also the shape of a lenticular craft. So there's a lot of possibilities. It may not have been teleportation. It may have been a giant disc craft, and the measurements we're seeing are revealing the Vesica Pisces shape, which a human interprets as a boat. But then we also see these ancient diagrams of boats floating in the air. Right.
Sure we do. Let me jump in really quick. We're going to hit a break. Our guest tonight, David Cereda. We're talking pyramids and prophecy. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, and this is Coast to Coast AM. We'll be right back after this short break.